Going to begin with a piece from the Chumash, from the Parsha. The very end of Parshas Naso has the famous Nesiim. There are Nesiim that come along and they bring Karbanos. And everyone knows, oh, Vayi Bayom HaRishon, Bayom HaSheni, and it's all the same words. But I want to spend a few moments on understanding what actually takes place on each of those days. You see, there were 8 days of dedicating the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan. On the 8th day was finale day, the middle of great festivities, a joyous occasion. And Nadav Avihu, they go ahead and they decide there's an all-time favorite, Ketoret. Everyone loves Ketoret. And they go ahead and they bring the Ketoret fatefully. And unfortunately, there was a tragic ending to the story. Well, the story continues not in Sefer Vayikra, but right here in Parshas Naso. In the middle of the Parsha, Vayi B'yom Kolot HaMishkan, it was on that day that Moshe finished building the Mishkan, the 8th day, and the Nesiim come bearing gifts. Which gifts do they have? They have korbanot, they've got wagons, and bulls. How many bulls? 12 bulls? You think of the Sukkot bulls, probably? What? 12 bulls. Why 12? You could say one per shevet. But how many wagons were there? Six. Two. Shvatim per wagon. And each wagon will be drawn by 2 bulls. 6 wagons to be given to the Levium. Who are the Levium? The Levium come along and they replace the Bechorim. The Bechorim, they let us down. The firstborn, they're meant to Israel. Chedams appears on the scene, and what happens? The Jews serve. The Jews form the Egel. Where were our firstborn leading the Jewish people? They let us down. They weren't there for us. They did not come along and say, no, don't sell Yosef. Don't kill Yosef. Where was that firstborn? Reuven wasn't there. He let us down. Where was the firstborn by Cheta Egel? No, don't worship the Cheta Egel. Don't make a... They let us down again. And the firstborn repeatedly let us down. Well, that was the last straw. And it's time to replace them. If they're not working for you, next. And the Nesiim, the Levium, I'm sorry, take their place. The Levium take their place on which day? The opening of last Parsha. Which day is the opening of last Parsha? The 20th of Iyar. Iyar is the second month. Nisan's the first. The second of Iyar. The 20th of Iyar. 20 days into the second month. We're 50 days after the beginning of the month. Of the beginning of the year. Everyone's with me? 50 days after the beginning of the year, Levi replaces the Bechorim. Which day did we say the Nesiim brought wagons? Aleph Nisan, the first day of the year. They brought wagons for who? To help the Levites carry the Kalim, the Levium. The Levium aren't carrying any Kalim. Who's carrying the Kalim as of the first of Nisan? The Bechorim. Let's do Chazara. What did we just say? The firstborn are in charge until the 20th of Iyar. The Nesiim on the first day of the year, in Rosh Chodesh Nisan, while the Bechorim are still in charge, bring wagons for the Levium to carry the Kalim. For the Levium? The Levium haven't replaced the Bechorim yet. Why are they bringing wagons for the Levium? They should be bringing wagons for the Bechorim. Interesting question, no? Something's out of order here. I think the answer is that they brought the wagons for whoever's in charge of carrying the kelim. Let it be the Bechorim, later it becomes the Levium. The Torah mixes it with the Levium because ultimately it's the Levium who carry it. It doesn't say they brought it for the Levium. So they brought it and it ends up being given to the Levium. So the Torah makes it as if they brought it for the Levium. Simple answer. But listen very carefully. The first day of Nisan then becomes the day of replacements. Bechorim, you let us down. The Levium, already as of the first day of Nisan, it's already slated for later. In 50 days, you're going to be replaced with the Levium. It's already known as of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you're going to be replaced. Well, someone else is replaced as well. Nadav Avihu did what? They brought Ketoret. And that was not accepted. Who brings Ketoret on the very same day? The very same day, someone brings Ketoret and it is loved. The Nisim. The Nisim, when they bring those wagons, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to have Karbanot from them. I want to have Ketoret from them. The opening Rashi of next week's Parsha, Parsha Palotcha, plays the story out where Aaron Cohen is really upset. And I understand it. My children died bringing Ketoret. And now you're accepting, encouraging Ketoret from them. This is the day that everybody is getting replaced. The Levium replaced the Bechorim. And now the Nesiim are replacing the Kohanim. Kohanim who should bring the Ketoret, now you have Nesiim bringing Ketoret. That's my spot. That's my kids. Why are they taking my kids' light? And Aaron is saddened at that moment. In the end, Kadosh Baruch Hu saves the day. He says, Aaron, it was just a specific thing they did. You're still chosen. You'll light the menorah. But listen to how beautiful it is what the Nesiim did. I don't know when they found out that they were going to be taking that spot. They'd be in the spotlight. Did they get advance warning? Was it just they wanted to do something on behalf of every Shevet? And when they appeared on the first day of the year, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Hashem said, that's beautiful. That's so amazing. Look what they did. No one put them up to it. They just decided, we want to bring gifts to the guys that are stuck with the burden of carrying the kelim. I will say, so many people have that foresight to think about others. To put in that extra phone call to someone just because they're down. To send a letter, a card to that person. You know, one of the people that meant so much to me, continues to mean so much to me, this Beis Medrash, his name, the Blumenfeld Beis Medrash. When I got engaged, so Mrs. Blumenfeld, she makes cards, handmade cards. She's an artist. Her first husband, unfortunately passed away. She just remarried last year. Baruch Hashem. And she was close to my in-laws, Mr. and Mrs. Blumenfeld. When I got engaged, I didn't know them. She made me a handcrafted card, wrote the most beautiful message. Why? Just because she wanted to think of someone else, to welcome someone into the community. You're marrying into someone, a family in our community. Let me make you feel welcome. Those are the people that think about others. The Nesiim, I don't know if they were told they're going to get the spotlight, and because they knew they were going to be leaders, they thought, let's go do something that displays leadership. Or they had no idea, and just they knew that was the big day. Let's do something for those that get the zechut to carry it. Let's make it easier for them to carry. How are they going to carry it? It's heavy. Let's get them wagons. They thought of it on their own. So I don't know which one came first. That's what Rav Aaron Cutler used to say. Let's say you're at an event at a tish and you need a chair. You get a chair, that's nice. You're allowing yourself to participate. You get two chairs, one for another guy, you're a tzaddik. Because you thought of someone else. And if you get chairs and you don't even need one, then you just push it an ultimate tzaddik. That's the Nisiyan. What I wanted to display was the idea of the Nisiyim getting chosen every day, another day, is Hashem saying, I love your act so much, I want to give every one of you your own day of Yontef. You're a beautiful Yid. You thought about other people. You took it upon yourself just to stand. Think about someone else. I'm making every one of you your own Yontef. Vayi bayom arishon, vayi bayom ashmini. I've heard Divrei Torah also. It's a funny Divrei Torah. How miraculous it was that they all brought the same thing. It wasn't miraculous. They were told to bring the same thing. The beautiful piece is that they thought of whoever it was that's going to be carrying the kelim, we're in to help them. It's really an amazing story. Amazing, amazing story about someone named Rabbi Arya Yudin. I told this to my halacha class. Rabbi Arya Yudin is the son of my hometown rabbi. And when he finished his years in Israel, he had a job interview in Manhattan. So he goes to the interview, and when he gets there, he realizes that he was a few hours early. So what does a good Jewish boy do when you're a few hours early in Manhattan? Lunch. There are a lot of options, right? Rabbi Yudin, not knowing what to do, I know. I'll go to Columbia Presbyterian Hospital on 125th Street, and I'll go visit the Jewish patients. And he's meeting with this elderly woman, and they're talking. And this woman says to him, where are you from? He says, I'm from Fairlawn, New Jersey. She says, Fairlawn. Do you know Rabbi Benji Yudin? He's like, yeah, I've heard of him. She says, you remind me of him. Really? How's that? So she said, well, once I was sick, I live in Brooklyn, and once I was sick, and I was having really a lot of trouble in life, and no one knew I was sick, no one cared about me, and he drove from Fairlawn to Brooklyn just to visit me. You remind me of him. Rabbi say that's the act of the Nisiyim. The Nisiyim that say, wait, it's not my job to carry the kelim. Maybe I should build a wagon to help myself. I have a lot on my back. Let's figure out how I'm going to make a great backpack. They said, someone else is going to have a lot to carry. Let me figure out how to get a great backpack for him. Someone else is doing something great or hard or experiencing a rough time in life. Let me go help him. That's the act of the Nisiyim. An act that's selfless, an act of devotion. And that's the act that grants them to bring Ketoret. Just like the Kohen Gadol brings Ketoret every day, the act of Yom Kippur, Ketoret, so too those that go out with such devotion. I'd like to talk a little bit about business. Because the business world has captured the minds of every single one of us. You see, because we are interested in making money and leading secure lives and comfortable lives revolving around money, we are willing to do things that we otherwise would not be willing to do. We are willing to go to 4 years of high school, let alone many years of elementary school. We're willing to listen and study hard for specific exams. We know how to pick them, the ones that will count. And we know that college is important because we got to get those good grades, and we butter up to professors, and we create networks in college in order to have a foot in the right door so we could get ahead. So we'll have more business, more money, more comfort. You see, if you put the dots together, there are a lot of frustrations in the learning process. But you're willing to go through every one of them in order to get ahead and succeed in life. Let's say all those people that say, I cannot. All those frustrations, that's beyond me. I can't memorize those things. I get depressed when there are so many people in college. Maryland University has got like 30,000 students. There's so many people doing this college thing. And that's just, I'm just one student amongst so many. There must be like a billion like me. I'm overwhelmed. I am paralyzed in not realizing my own self-identity, and I don't know how to continue. And when I hit those essays that are just so difficult and taxing, I simply buckle and cannot go on. That's not what happens. What happens is you see that dollar sign, the comfort, the life that you want, and you push ahead through it all. You persevere, you persist, you get through every single piece of this. Why? It doesn't matter. Your parents are going to pay $200,000, $100,000, so you could go to college. Over the course of your educational career, it's something like $500,000 per child. Then parents, when you will be parents, you'll be willing to sink in for this endeavor, all to hope for a better life. In other words, we're willing to do really crazy things, and we don't even notice most of them. We just are motivated and go on, move on ahead. So the world of money, we all understand. The world of success, we all chop. We get it, we taste it, we live it, and it motivates us. Well, what about Torah? What about other areas that might be important? But you take the money out, all of a sudden, we don't necessarily have that same approach. And it really is a function of perspective. And I'm going to give you an example. There was a boy in Leva Torah who said he cannot learn Gemara possibly ever. There are just too many Aramaic terms. There are just too many. I can't learn another language, Rabbi. I have a block in my brain to learning other languages. I cannot do it. Okay? He suffered from another problem that some have can relate to the challenge, and that was he was not a morning person. He could not actually physically remove himself from the claws of bed. And bed just utterly and entirely consumed him until about 11 a.m., and it would let its grip go, and he was free at that point to put on his phylacteries. So there was a real shift at one point because he decided he wanted to go into medicine. So he pushed the yeshiva to open up a Mada course. Well, the only time it wouldn't interfere with the studies in the yeshiva were Tuesday nights and Friday mornings. And Mada came for the introduction and said, well, listen, if you're going to take this seriously, you can't come late. You come late twice, you're out. Second time you come late, you're out of the program. Number two is that you're going to have to memorize something like 2,000 Hebrew medical terms. That's a lot. Some of them you can't even pronounce. So he's like, I could do that. Like, what happened to that like block in your brain? And Friday mornings was at 8 a.m. You have so much I could do this. About a month in, he noticed the hypocrisy. Wait a minute. He successfully memorized. He was an excellent Hatzalah guy. Did a great job. And he memorized all 2,000 words and got up every Friday morning. Did not miss one. I saw him running down the hill. That was the days when we had apartments separate from the yeshiva. And I'd watch him Friday mornings dashing down, 7:50. I got to be there early, set up the classroom. Mada's coming. They're going to teach us. And at some point, he himself realized this. How is it that all of a sudden I can memorize words? How could I get up early? It's just a function of perspective that this is important to me and this isn't. He decided maybe I should be giving it a better shot. And he flipped the switch. I'm gonna try. That day that he flipped the switch, I'm gonna give it a shot. All of a sudden, he started to learn more intensely. He started to love it more. And in the end, he came back a second year. And already in his first year, watch what happened as a result of that little flip of the switch. Little tiny act that took place just because he realized after 2/3 of the year of saying, I can't, I can't, I can't, all he had to do was say, I can. And it changed life for him and his entire family. His older brother had just finished medical school, and right before he went into residency, he had a 6-week trip. He decided that these 6 weeks he'll come to Israel, visit his brother, and he came. His brother convinced him, what are you going to do? You're going to like just tour around Israel? You got nothing going on. Come to yeshiva, at least for a day. Well, his brother loved the yeshiva for that day. He ended up moving in. We gave him, made him a full-fledged Leva Torah alumni. And he left religious. His sister was in U of T in Austin, Texas. And she decided, well, my brothers are now religious. Maybe I too should check it out. And she ended up, after college, going to Neve Yerushalayim, and she became religious. And then the last piece of the puzzle, his mom started sending out to her email list a website called Portion of Parsha with a recipe and a Dvar Torah every single week. Now, do you understand what happened here? This boy who decided, I can, became religious, became involved in Torah, and his entire family became religious as a result. And I want to address two specific areas from the business world, because we can relate to business. We could relate to the dollar sign, the desire for success in life. And let's try to learn from that and maybe carry it over into the Torah world. Two points I want to focus on. Point number one, in 1979, Harvard Business School, the MBA program, ran a survey of all the graduates in the business school. And a guy named Mark McCormick wrote a book detailing this survey that took place. And the book is called All the Things They Do Not Teach You in Harvard Business School. And he goes through the survey. And the entire class, they asked, who here has a mission statement? A mission statement is basically where you set your goals. 3% of the class had missions, and they wrote them down. Explicit, detailed, this is our mission statement. No one put them up to it. No one asked them. No one taxed them to do it. They just on their own chose to do this. 13% had goals, they claimed, but never wrote them down. 84% did not have goals. This is Harvard Business School. 10 years later, they went and researched where everyone is holding. And 10 years later, the 13% that had goals but never wrote them down were on average doing twice better than the average of the 84%. And the 3%, my friends, that had specific written down goals, each of them were doing 10 times better than the average of any of the 13%. That means each one of them was doing basically better than the cumulative total of any one of the other 97%. It seems to be a good idea to write down your goals, right? Sounds like we just stumbled on a pretty decent trick. Why is it that no one writes down their goals? So Mark McCormick ended his research on this topic there. But then another book entitled Goals, that's the name of the book, very clear what it's about, picked up this topic. Why then don't people make goals? What's wrong with us? We just heard a clear survey coming out of Harvard that this is the trick to succeed. But we don't do it. What's wrong with us? Three reasons. The book has four. I'm going to address three of them. I only like three. I thought one was an overlap. Number one, we don't think it's important. And when I say we don't think it's important, I want to ask you the following question. Think about this. Your five friends that you hang out with more than anyone else. The five friends you hang out with more than others. Do they make goals? If they don't, you probably don't. It's as clear as that. Just like the idea that when you get married, if your wife is into Minion, you'll go to Minion. If your wife is into learning, you'll learn. She's not into Minion, you won't go. She's not into learning, you won't learn. It's as simple as that. Your five close friends, if they are not goal setters in life, but they just fly by the seat of their pants, so will you. It's just not important. If everyone is partying, party. If your friends are chashuv, you'll be chashuv. It's a great thing, by the way, I noticed about being a gadol adar. All the gadolim marry each other. You ever notice that? Like Rav Eliashiv's brother-in-law is Shlomo Zalman Orbach, right? And Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and they're all intermarried, because gadolim do that. Who is it? Rav Zilberstein. Rav Zilberstein is his son-in-law. Yeah. Is the son-in-law of Rav Eliashiv. And Rav Shalom Shadron, the Magid, was married into the Orbachs. And the Chazon Ish and the Stipler, and right, the Stipler married Miriam Ish. That's Karlitz, right? And right, they all marry each other. It's a great thing. And your kids are Gedolim, and your parents are Gedolim, and your friends are Gedolim. It's like a fantastic network. I recommend it. Become a Gedol. I'm working on it. You guys should just become Gedolim. It's the way to go. You want to beget Gedolim? Become a Gedol. It's simple. So that's number one. Number one is people don't realize how important it is. Number two, they don't know how to make goals. They just don't have a clue. Make it a manageable goal. Make it critical, relevant, attainable, clear and specific. I'll be Superman. I don't know. What does that mean? I'll be good from now on. What is that? Have a specific goal. Attainable goals. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Didn't think I'd quote him. He actually wrote an essay. He writes. And one of his essays is about how he became a heavyweight champion. And basically, he writes two remarkable points. One, you have to have goals. You have to, as soon as you have your attainable goal and you come close to attaining it, right away, change your goal to the next level. Don't wait till you hit it and then sit there dumbfounded, oh gee, I hit my goal, now what do I do, Ma? Right before you hit it, refocus the goal. And number two, Arnold Schwarzenegger writes, when you're working on the most important life path, the goal that will put you on your life path, stay away from women. I quote, that first piece, we've been with women the first portion of our lives. You'll be with women when you marry them. The only question is, if you could go a few months without. Is there such a possibility? You guys are already leaving yeshiva. It's not a discussion for now. But self-control is very much the discussion. Goals. Do you know how to make a goal? That's point two. Do you know how to strive for a goal? Number three, people are terrified of failure, even from themselves. I'm going to write down the goal, and then I'm not going to meet it. Look who failed. And you can't face yourself. I want to tell you that every single person who has succeeded in life has failures. There's no one in life that has succeeded that hasn't overcome his failures. And when he fell, he then brushed himself off, figured out how to deal with that failure, and move on in life. I saw a wild documentary of three people with learning disabilities that have succeeded tremendously. And all of them tell the story of how they ultimately succeeded was a result of their dealing with their disability head on. One of them had a terrible speech impediment, and when the teachers would go up and down the rows calling on the kids to, it's your turn to read, Michael, it's your turn to read, Maishala, it's your turn to read. So every single time, he would make sure to leave and walk out, time to go to the bathroom. Until one day, the teacher made a rule, no one is going to the bathroom. Everyone's going to be reading. And he was getting more and more terrified as his turn got closer and closer. He didn't know what to do. And he took his pencil. He stabbed it into his leg and needed to go on an ambulance to the hospital. It was his only way to get out of reading. Ultimately, this individual decided it's time to contend with my issues and disabilities. And he became a multimillionaire. And he tells his story in this documentary how every piece of his success was based on that decision. I'm going to deal with it, compensate for my challenges, contend with it. And when he succeeded with that, he became a huge success in life. Rabosai, if we set goals, it's time to set Torah goals. It's time to set God goals. Actually, write them down, real ones. I know for a Avosher, some people write general ones, the non-specific, non-committal ones. Even when you're writing to yourself, Bali Neder, I hope to, be connected to Minyan. That's a nice thing. Write it out. Which Minyan? When? How many times? Be specific. What are you after? What are you going for? Because if I'm going for $5 million by the time I'm 30, then work backwards. Which company? Which business? How do I get there? Work backwards. Figure out how to get there. Because if I just see what life brings me, that's not. Then you're in the 84%. One more piece, my last piece to learn from the world of business. It was a very serious business that I almost ended up in when I was living in the United States. I lived there for 8 months married, and then we made Aliyah. In those 8 months, someone interested us to become partners in a certain business. I went to a certain convention about business. I was young. I didn't know anything about the world of business. So I went to a convention. And they explained that it needs three things. And if you can, a fourth. Number one, it takes books. You should be reading a business book every month. Number two, tapes. Back then, when I was before your time. Those were the things. Stuck it into a cassette player. Press play. Back in the day. So, that you have to listen, they said, to to listen to 2 audio lectures every week. 2 lectures a week. The third is conventions. Conventions come up these weekends, like in Memphis. They always pick some great non-Jewish place. Let's go to Memphis. What's going on in Memphis? And that's where we go for the conventions. There are Jews in Memphis. I don't mean that. But not where the conventions are. And they go off there. Atlanta. There are a lot of Atlanta conventions for the businesses. And Rabosa, you go to conventions once or twice a year. The possible fourth is celebrities. If you can get in a contact with one of those money gurus, the giants, one of those Forbes 500 fellows, you could say, I know him. And if you get a photo op with him, wow. Just put it on your Facebook. Send it out to your friends. This is going to get you far in life. And these are the 3, if you can, that fourth, that's the way to go. Now, I don't know much about business. I left that opportunity, at least. And I can't tell you how to make millions in actual dollars ba'olam hazeh. I can tell you, though, how to be a ben olam haba. When we went through an entire year of yeshiva, night and day, vayer vayvoker, everyone here went through the times of struggle. Do I like Torah? Do I not like Torah? Am I into Torah? Am I into mitzvot? I'm not into mitzvot. It takes 3, it would be good, 4 things. Books, we got a lot of them, probably more per capita than any other nation. We got a lot of books. If you finish 1 a month, that would be fantastic. You could take your time. There's no mitzvah to finish. But always have a book. Wherever you go. I had a friend who couldn't learn anything. But he always had a Mesilas Yesharim with him in the car, in his bag. I don't think he ever learned Mesilas Yesharim. But he always had a Mesilas Yesharim with him. He's a kosher yid. He's a good guy. And he held strong. He's the guy that was classic, probably would have ended up at all the parties and leaving all the mitzvos behind. But he had a Mesilas Yesharim with him wherever he went. I think that held him. 2, it takes audio shiurim. Be the geek that listens to Torah shiurim online. Listen to Sicho, listen to Rav Natanel's thoughts, listen to Rav Schechter. You could get Rav Schechter, one of the Gedolei Ador. You could listen to him. It's candy. He just gives out Torah. It's easy to understand. Should say like a huge benching on his shiurim. It's sweet. Listen to the audio shiurim. 3, conventions. In 1985, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik came to Fairlawn, New Jersey to give a lecture. I don't know who thought about this wonderful idea to schedule the same night as the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, in the entire tri-state area, to hear one of the premier Gedolei Ador, we almost had a full house, which was under 300 seats. He was competing with the Super Bowl. What could you do? It's a Gedolei Ador, the Super Bowl. I hear. Bad choice. Indeed, it was a bad choice to schedule it then. But here's the point I want to make. Go out of your way. I'm not telling you you have to stop with the Super Bowl and choose the Gadol for a Bosai. Once a year, go out of your way, way out of your way, once a year to a convention. A convention means, go. If you're in downtown New York, go uptown to hear Rav Schechter. Once a year, go way out of your way to hear a Gadol speak, to give a shiur. Go. What are you going to get out of that chair? What do you get at a business convention? You know what you get? You get 1 diamond. You probably get a bunch of garbage, waste, maybe some colleagues and networking, and you usually hear over the course of an entire weekend 1 diamond. And you use that diamond, and it helps your business for life. What do you get out of a Torah convention? You get usually 1 diamond, 1 chizuk that lasts with you for the rest of your life. Go pursue those. Come back to Eretz Yisrael during winter v'zman to learn, to sit and learn during winter vacation. Praise, a little bit of praise in front of him. Avi Lieberman. Right? Come, sit, and learn. Learn. Not just to tour. There's plenty of time. You come and tour with your family. Go to Gedolim, run to Gedolim. And the fourth, if you can do it, if you can hack it, it's so cool if you could become close to a Gadol Ador. Any of them. Any rabbi. I don't care which rabbi. So he's not a Gadol. Be close to rabbis. There are so many Talmidim. I had a Talmid here in the yeshiva who was not into any Torah whatsoever. He could not learn for diddly. He couldn't sit. All he loved was fantasy worlds. That was the only thing he liked in life. But he loves Rav Schechter. And when Rav Schechter, he doesn't know a word of Torah, this guy. But when Rav Schechter came, he and Rav Schechter are buddies. Rav Schechter knows him, and he knows Rav Schechter, and he like worships the steps Rav Schechter takes, and they are close. I don't know what they're close with, what they're close in, but that is cool. Rabosai, do that. Get close to a rabbi. How awesome is it when you get married, they have a whole bunch of celebrity rabbis at your wedding. You want to be that guy. How do you do that? Talk to them. Go to them. Go out of your way. Rabbi Reisman gives a shiur in Brooklyn on Matzei Shabbos. About 700 people go to that shiur. It's an awesome Tanakh shiur. 10 o'clock in Brooklyn every Matzei Shabbos. Rabbi Reisman, that's insane. How am I going to ever get to go once a year? Once a year, get there. If you're in Boston, get there. Stay for Shabbos at someone, one of the guys' house that lives in New York, New Jersey, and say, I know we haven't learned the blessed word this year. We're going to go to Brooklyn that Matzei Shabbos. Once a year. That's what I'm talking about. It takes these four things. I don't know how to get you millions in this world. I know how to get you millions in the world of Torah. So, Rabosai, let's do a little chazara, a mission statement. Don't be scared. Two, books. Even just take them with you. It would be better, of course, if you learn them. If you have some audio shiurim, listen to one or two shiurim a week. You want to make it big. That's how to make it big for you and your family and your kids. Because the confusion that every one of you and I had growing up, do I want this? Or do I want non-Jew Amanda, who was my Irish Catholic partner when I was in my master's program? What do I want? And your kids may just go through the same confusion that you went through. Every word that you learn and you persevere adds to that family dynamic, a love of Torah and Yiddishkeit. So Mirtzei Hashem should start strong, start with that commitment to grow. And you'll go, Echayel, Echayel, from one level to a higher and higher level.